on January 20th, 2025.
Please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States. And
will Donald Trump was inaugurated for the second time.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
And almost immediately started working his way through a large pile of executive orders.
Withdrawing from the World Health Organization, sir.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Including one that announced his intention to withdraw the United States from the World Health Organization, which he says cost too much.
They were paying $39 million, we were paying $500 million. It seemed a little unfair to me. So that wasn't the reason, but I dropped out.
Well, that's one of the reasons listed on his executive order. Another is the organization's, quote, mishandling of the COVID-19 pandemic and also its inability to demonstrate independence from the inappropriate political influence of WHO member states. That's the wording on the executive order. And this was big international news.
Yeah, breaking news coming in right now. Donald Trump, right on his first day of office and the second term, has withdrawn.
Trump is once more pulling the U.S. out of the World Health Organization.
Public health experts in Kenya have warned that the looming withdrawal will have far-reaching ramifications to the international fight against global health initiatives.
Crippled, it could leave poorer countries more vulnerable to health scares. Diseases are far more likely to spill over borders, and that could make a pandemic more likely.
Global health initiatives crippled, poorer countries made vulnerable, diseases more likely to spill over borders. That's some of what the international community thinks of the president's decision. But are those opinions correct? Or are we really not getting our money's worth? Is it maybe both? Let's talk about it. From Texas Public Radio, this is Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
Support for Petri Dish is made possible by UT Health San Antonio, committed to transforming the health of the community through a team that tackles problems from every angle, doing everything it takes to bring each patient the best possible outcomes. From teaching tomorrow's healthcare leaders to translating research into new treatments, UT Health San Antonio strives to make lives better. Learn more at everythingittakes.org.
The World Health Organization regrets the announcement that the United States of America intends to withdraw from the organization.
That's WHO spokesman Tariq Yasharevich.
WHO plays a crucial role in protecting the health and security of the world's people, including Americans, by addressing the root causes of disease, building stronger health systems, and detecting, preventing, and responding to health emergencies, including disease outbreaks, and often in dangerous places where others cannot go.
He noted that the U.S. was a founding member of the Health Agency of the United Nations back in 1948.
Together, we ended smallpox, and together we have brought polio to the brink of eradication.
And he left the door wide open for negotiation that might induce President Trump to change his mind.
We hope the United States will reconsider, and we look forward to engaging in constructive dialogue to maintain the partnership between the United States of America and WHO for the benefit of the health and well-being of millions of people around the globe.
But should President Trump change his mind? Today, we're talking to a public health expert who has been on Petri Dish quite a few times. She's the author of a newsletter called Your Local Epidemiologist, which started in 2020 in the early months of the COVID pandemic. And it breaks down public health news in a way we could all easily understand. which is especially important right now, is the Trump administration has barred federal health agencies from talking to the press or public. We're joined, of course, by Caitlin Gentilina, and we'll start with the simplest of questions. We've all heard of the World Health Organization, particularly since the emergence of the COVID virus, but what does it actually do?
Yeah, the World Health Organization is a specialized agency to the United Nations. Its mission is basically to promote health, keep people safe, and serve vulnerable populations worldwide. They do a whole wide range of things, everything from coordinating pandemic responses to setting international health guidelines, to ensuring low-income countries have approved vaccinations through an emergency approval process. And it's even beyond infectious diseases, right? They also focus on mental health, non-communicable diseases, injury from car accidents, really the whole gambit, because public health touches on every part of our lives.
So what I did not hear in there, and what I guess President Trump would want to hear, is what does it do for the United States specifically? Like, what will we lose if Trump follows through on this?
Yeah, so I think that's a really good question, right? What does the withdrawal mean to the United States? The U.S. is interesting. The U.S. has this robust health infrastructure. We have our own vaccine and diagnostic certification systems. We have advanced surveillance capabilities through like the CDC. So most of what WHO provides, like technical assistance, doesn't really apply to the United States. So I think the really good question is, why does this matter? And to me, there's three main reasons. One, just self-interest, right? Infectious diseases don't respect borders. COVID, flu, Ebola, you name it. Without WHO, there's really no centralized system to respond to global health threats. And when one country suffers, the world is at risk. Even if the U.S. is well-equipped to handle its own challenges, our safety depends on the rest of the world being equipped as well.
Right. So healthy neighbors keep us healthy. That makes sense.
Two is geopolitical implications. So if or when, I guess now, the U.S. withdraws from the WHO, it leads a leadership vacuum. And guess who's ready and willing to step in? That is China. And if China dominates the global health governance, it could really shape international health policies that don't necessarily align with U.S. interests. You know, I think that not enough people think of public health as a diplomacy tool.
Right. So if we're not part of the World Health Organization, we really don't have any influence over their policies.
The third is just, and this is what is in my heart, of just being a good neighbor. So for many low-income countries, the WHO is all they have for their public health infrastructure. Without it, they lose knowing effectiveness of vaccines, of diagnostics, of these technical expertise, for example. And if the U.S., which is the largest donor to the WHO, really steps back, these gaps widen. And I think, and I guess this is a value statement, that supporting the WHO is part of our responsibility as a wealthy nation to help lift others up.
All right. I want to drill down on a couple of those things that you said in there, starting with what you said about geopolitical implications. What do you mean when you say that if China moves into the leadership role at WHO, it might begin to adopt policies that don't align with U.S. interests?
I mean, a lot of it has to do, there's soft power here. And so I think it's really important the U.S. maintains its influence in global health by leading with principles of transparency and accountability. I mean, we saw during COVID-19 that there were critics of the organization. They were too slow to declare a public health emergency and too differential to China in the early days of this pandemic. And it impacted all of us because of that. And so I think mainly is that soft power, again, the transparency, the accountability, because especially infectious diseases impact all of us.
And China is eager to step into that leadership void that would be created by the exit of the United States from the World Health Organization. in an editorial published in The Atlantic back in 2020, the first time Trump announced his intention to withdraw the U.S. from the WHO, Anne Applebaum wrote that China had outsmarted the Trump administration and has been rewriting the rules of the global order to be more in line with those of autocracies than democracies. Regardless, as the U.S. plans to recall and reassign government personnel and contractors working in any capacity with the WHO, China has been sending some of its best and brightest diplomats to work at and often lead international agencies. This seems like it might be a problem, as Trump's chief complaint against the World Health Organization was that it dropped several balls during the early part of the COVID-19 pandemic and deferred to China. Pandemics, by definition, impact the United States, and you can't improve the situation at the WHO if you are not a part of it, as I mentioned before. So, Dr. Jedalina, say more on what you think about the WHO's work at the beginning of the pandemic.
I mean, yeah. First of all, COVID put WHO under a microscope, and they were too slow to declare a public health emergency, way too deferential to China, and especially in those early days of the pandemic, were not willing to come out very forthright about lab leak or natural spillover. And I think a lot of that criticism is valid, but there's also systemic issues at play here, right? That WHO just doesn't have the power to force countries to share data or comply with recommendations. It can only work with the information it's given. And early in the pandemic, that information was limited.
And then there's cost, right? And the gap between what we contribute and what everyone else contributes.
Yeah. So the U.S. is the single biggest donor to WHO. Germany is the next in line of donor, but by hundreds of millions of dollars. Like we are, it's complicated, right? Because some of the WHO's formula is based on economy. And so there's a reason why the U.S. pays much more than, for example, China at this moment.
So Trump is correct when he says we pay more than everyone else, but he's incorrect about the numbers. So here's the formula. The WHO draws money from two buckets. One is membership dues, essentially, and the agency calculates the amount of each country's dues based on its economic wealth, not its population, as Trump suggests. The U.S. has the wealthiest economy on the planet, even if it doesn't have a population anywhere near as big as China's, so the United States pays the highest dues. But the numbers aren't as far apart as Trump seems to think. For the 2024-2025 period, the U.S. is expected to contribute $264 million to China's $181 million. But membership dues only make up 20% of the WHO's budget. The remaining 80% comes from voluntary contributions, and this is where the gap between the U.S. and China widened significantly. For the most recent WHO budget, the U.S. voluntarily contributed $442 million. China volunteered $2.5 million. That is a huge gap, yes, but it's also a voluntary gap. So, now what?
I think that's the billion-dollar question right now, is where do we go from here?
We'll dive into that when Petri Dish continues.
Support for TPR comes from the University of Texas at San Antonio's Brain Health Consortium, a pioneering research hub advancing neuroscience, neuroengineering, precision medicine, and more. Learn more at utsa.edu/bhc.
Welcome back to Petri Dish. I'm Bonnie Petri.
I withdrew from the World Health Organization, where we paid $500 million a year and China paid $39 million a year, despite a much larger population.
Think of that. China's
so the countdown clock is ticking. It takes a year from the time that the intention is announced for it to officially take effect.
But maybe we would consider doing it again. I don't know. Maybe we would. They have to clean it up a little bit.
Wait, what? That's Trump at a rally on January 25th, 5 days after he signed his executive order. So maybe this isn't a done deal? We've been talking with your local epidemiologist, Caitlin Gentilina. What do you think is next?
I think that's the billion-dollar question right now, is where do we go from here? WHO is not perfect. It definitely needs reform. Abandoning is not the answer. But this takes a level of humility on the WHO side to change. And it takes us in the United States realizing that, you know, saving $1 billion is a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of our budget. And I think that there are really big personalities at play here, particularly with China. And resolving those within a few months or even a year is very unlikely.
So not likely, but President Trump is hinting that it's possible. So when you say it needs reform, what do you mean?
Personally, I think there needs to be stronger leadership, one that is willing to come to the table and really have these really tough conversations. And then even refining scope. One of the problems right now with WHO is that it just focuses on a lot. The scope is massive. And when you're trying to do everything, you end up struggling to do anything at all. And so the result is that between what it says it can do and what it delivers is a massive gap that needs to be refined.
So when you say refining scope, I think of infectious diseases, right? Because not only do we still have COVID floating around, evolving and constantly threatening to become something that's, again, more lethal, and we have H5N1 bird flu looming in the near distance, it too is threatening to become an international problem.
Yeah, maybe you can just focus on infectious diseases, but this is where you're going to get a huge debate within public health because, yeah, infectious diseases is really important. It needs a lot of collaboration and coordination because diseases don't see borders. But if you look at the number one reason people are dying, it's because of chronic diseases. And so does that, then we need to talk about chronic diseases or do we need to talk about mental health? It's a lot what the debate around CDC's scope looks like right now within the United States is what is their role? What do they focus on? And given that they have a shoestring budget, where do we get the most bang for our buck?
Right now, there is an outbreak of one of the viruses that haunt my nightmares, Marburg, in Tanzania. Now, the Minister of Health in that country initially denied that the Ebola-like killer was infecting people there, but the World Health Organization independently reported the outbreak with 9 suspected cases and 8 deaths at that time. And now it sent a team to Tanzania to help stop that outbreak. I don't know, that seems to me like bang for our buck because I seriously did not want Marburg here.
I agree. And, you know, it has the most direct implications to us as Americans as well, right? What happens with an infectious disease that comes out of the jungle in name that country will have direct implications on us. A country having really high obesity, there's a lot more indirect pathways to the United States. I could make those pathways, and I'm an epidemiologist. But like, if Americans really want to know the value that WHO is bringing to them, I would lead with infectious diseases, yes.
Yeah, I mean, if the U.S. withdraws its money, can the WHO even continue to do this kind of work?
I think that's the big question right now, you know, right? If the U.S. provides the biggest chunk of money to the WHO, what does that even look like? Notwithstanding that other countries have this domino effect. And I think that we would have a really big problem not having countries not talking to each other about what's going on with health around the world.
Right. Yeah. Flying blind in this kind of thing, it seems like a very bad idea. And this week, President Trump ordered the CDC to stop communicating with WHO, which means we're out of the loop on Marburg in Africa, and the world is out of the loop on the Kansas City tuberculosis outbreak and the H5N1 bird flu situation that is escalating in the United States. And I can't imagine that is good for anyone.
WHO, for all of its flaws, it is the backbone of global health coordination. And without it, we'd have no centralized system to manage these cross-border health threats. And for low-income countries, WHO is sometimes the only person there to provide technical assistance, and that will have impact on biosecurity. There's no doubt in my mind that WHO plays a critical role. It is far from perfect. And we need to reform it, yes, but definitely not abandon it.
So, Dr. Jadalita, how would you make that case to a person who really isn't interested in multilateralism like President Trump and is perfectly fine with not funding things like vaccine programs in low-income countries?
You know, and I typically stick to those three topics of one, self-interest. Protecting them means protecting us, that we're, you know, making sure they're well equipped to find new diseases means we're more well equipped. Again, these geopolitical implications of the leadership vacuum that's going to happen and the lost opportunity to use public health as this diplomacy tool. And then I know number three doesn't usually resonate with a lot, but being a good neighbor, like we just need to be good. This is a team sport. Health is a team sport, whether you are local, whether you're national, or looking at an international lens, and we need to play our part.
But like we've been talking about, being a good neighbor is also about biosecurity.
Yeah, I mean, we're not doing it just out of the goodness of our heart. Like, yeah, sometimes, I mean, we get into public health to do that. But like, also, we don't want Ebola coming to Dallas again, right? Like, that was a disaster. So I think there's definitely self-interest in here. And we can't forget about that.
All right. We will be following this story closely as the year unwinds. Thank you so much for your expertise on this subject and talking with us, Caitlin Jadalita, your local epidemiologist. This episode of Petri Dish was produced by Jacob Rosati, TBR Vice President of News, Dan Katz, and me. I wrote the show, Jacob composed all the music, created the sound design, and edited the script. Yvette Benavides edits my story on TPR.org. Petri Dish is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Bonnie Petrie. Talk to you soon.